This is Invest Talk from KPP Financial, helping investors make sense of the markets one day at a time. Here's your host, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our, what are we, Wednesday? Wednesday, June 6th. I'm looking at a 6, so it's not June 6th, it's June 3rd. June 3rd, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. Appreciate you all tuning in. So much to talk about on today's show. Very interesting markets that we're just starting to see a little weakness today. One day doesn't make a trend, but you know, certainly a lot to unpack why that might have happened. We had big earnings after hours from names like Broadcom. There was one other big one as well. I can't remember off the top of my head, but both were down pretty big. I think it was a software name. When was it? I'll remember it later in the show. But my point here is a lot to unpack, a lot of economic news that we'll get to. But most importantly, will be your calls. Whatever is on your mind, don't hesitate to pick up the phone. Give us a call, 888-99-CHART. That is the number. As always, whatever money question came to mind, maybe you thought about it last night while you're laying in bed. Maybe it's something that sparked your interest today at work. Or maybe a headline you saw and you're trying to decide whether you should take that seriously or not. Whatever it is, we are here for all of it. I encourage you to give us a call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 888-99-CHART. Now, as you likely know, we wrapped up our Invest Talk Wealth webinar on May 6th about inflation. And we now have a recording over on our YouTube channel. So go check that out. But most importantly, will be our next one, which is about income. And our next wealth webinar is coming up on June 30th. So less than a month away, Tuesday, 12 to 1 p.m. Pacific time. Tuesday, June 30th, 12 to 1 p.m. Pacific time. Beyond the Yield, how to invest for your income needs. Very important one. In today's world where more and more people are retiring, they're looking for that income generation without the large potential loss, which can happen if you overstep your risk boundaries. And we're going to look at that. Where does it make sense to take a little risk? Where do you want to completely avoid? All of that, when it comes to income, we're going to look at it. So head over to investtalk.com and register. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance. We'll run down the show topics that we'll touch on in the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this first caller question now. Oh, we're doing a live call. I thought it was going to be, okay, we're going to talk to Richard in Santa Clarita, wants to talk about treasury bills.
Yes. Thanks, Justin, for once again taking my call. I've been a listener of this show for a long time, like over 10 years, and I try to catch every episode. But one of the things, I have a question going back to what Steve Teasley used to say, and maybe emphasized it because it were the conditions back then. But he always said that whenever the 10-year treasury is lower than the 2-year, when you have the inverted rate there, he said historically always it follows with a recession. Mm-hmm. And he said that recession, it may not be next month or in 5 months or maybe even 18 months, mm-hmm. but we did have a period of time a while back where the was an inversion that took was a long time lasting, and then finally it switched back to more the normal. Mm-hmm. So does that mean, and given what you've said about there are so many factors now, from the war mm-hmm. to AI and a lot of things competent, how does that hold? I mean, taking that into consideration, I don't think we've had a recession since the last inversion.
Yeah, that's definitely true that we didn't have an official recession because it did invert back in 2-year, 10-year. There it is, yield spread. I have all this data, sometimes it takes a second to find. Yeah, so that was back in 2023, into early 2024, where it was inverted. So I think that we're in a new era. that was post-World War II when things were a bit different. Now, what we have is what we call in the industry now fiscal dominance, where, yes, there can, and there's a lot of manipulation of the yield curve by Treasury, the Fed. They can do it based on issuance, or the issuing in the long end or the short end, all of that. And then the powers that be, they don't want a recession. They don't want to preside over a recession. So they'll put through some sort of spending packages, whether that's an emergency through some sort of a war, things like that. Whatever it is, they're manufacturing. And that's why I say the risk to most, for most people, the risk to markets, excuse me, is really a crash up. That's kind of what you're seeing now. Everyone's worrying about 08 type of deflationary bust crash. And that certainly could happen for short stints, but you've seen those short stints are hit with some sort of stimulus. And in the background now, you have such a large deficit. And that large deficit means huge interest payments. We know it's now over $1 trillion a year, higher than the military spending, at least for now. And what that is basically government spending, right? That's government spending because they're spending on interest, and that's going into people's pockets. That's dollars being created. Mm-hmm. And so that is kind of underlying everything and really, pun intended, no pun intended, trumps everything now to a degree, not entirely, but definitely has this veneer of just stimulus underneath the surface that's coming from government spending and government largesse, government effectively stimulus that's happening every single year with our deficits so large, right? We're at, 5-6%? Deficit to GDP ratio, which those are levels that you see during a recession. And so it's very hard to have a true recession when the government's spending that much. The real worry is that eventually if the bond market takes away the printing press, basically saying we're no longer willing to finance you. I think that's farther off than people understand. Mainly because the Treasury issuance schedule, are they issuing the long and the short end right now? And even under Trump, under the Biden administration, they were all kind of pushing on the low end, or the short end, which is issuing short dated Treasury bonds, which I think is what you kind of asked about originally. And that is stimulative to the overall economy. There's a lot of banks that want to own that type of paper. And so they're easy to find financing in the short term. What that ultimate release valve will be is the dollar. And that's why the dollar has been structurally weak for a couple of years now. And even when the expectation for Fed rate hikes increases, you're not seeing a big rally in the dollar. I see structural downside in the dollar. And that is the release valve of all of this money printing, all this fiscal dominance, all this fiscal largesse. So I know I talked a lot there. I kind of went on a tangent, but hopefully that gave you some perspective on what's going on with the underlying economy and why we're not seeing a recession, even though we had that inverted yield curve.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks for the call, Richard. Yeah, very interesting environment we're operating in here. Very new one. You have to get used to it, but we're heading into a quick break, and I welcome your calls now, whatever's on your mind. Maybe that sparked a question that you want to ask me right now. So give me a call. Either way, 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk, now closing in on 63 million downloads. And Justin Klein is here taking your questions live. 888-99-CHART.
Now, we had a great show yesterday. We looked into the story about how 10-year treasury yields are about to break out and what that means for bond and equity investors. We also answered a listener question on Mueller Industries that was submitted via our Invest Talk YouTube channel. If you happen to miss it, go check it out. And as always, the best way to follow Invest Talk is by checking us out and wherever you get your podcasts. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we'll get to all of it, which is our main focus point about gold. It's usually safe haven. It isn't really playing out as expected despite the war, but we'll talk about why. And there's actually a direct link in my mind of why gold has pulled back from its early February highs and the war in Iran, which you would expect higher inflation because of the war. Well, that's not really manifesting in higher gold prices. Once again, I'll tell you my perspective on why, as well as what's going on with central banks globally and why still there remains a longer term uptrend in place. So we'll look at that story. We'll also look at the Chinese solar industry. What's going on with that? You think you get a boost from what's going on in the Middle East, but so far, not so much. We'll talk about that. And then oil stocks, not the companies, talking about the inventory of oil, the lowest level in two decades. So when will we finally see that super spike in oil prices? We'll look at that story as well. We also have voice bank calls. One is on the EUAD. It's an ETF that holds European aerospace and defense companies. And then UROY, Uranium Royalty Corp, UROY. So you have a question on those two. And of course, questions that came in via the comment section over on our Invest Talk YouTube channel. But most importantly, as always, are your live calls. So whatever's on your mind, don't hesitate to reach out. 888-99-CHART is how you get through and ask your question 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Let's take a quick look at the markets today. It was a pretty broad-based sell-off. First one in a while. Large cap growth certainly struggled the most after had been the leader. And this is kind of how it works, right? You have when markets are not correlated, there's a very low correlation right now between the different sectors. And right now, today you got those that had been strong, names like NVIDIA, names like Oracle, Palantir, some of even the financial names, had been strong, but recently, at least today, they were weak. So NVIDIA down 3.3, Microsoft down 2.7, Oracle down 5%, IBM down 6%. And then in the finance space, Morgan Stanley down 2%, Goldman Sachs down 2%, Visa down 2%, MasterCard down almost 2%, Bank of America down 2%. So a lot of weakness there. But strength out of pockets such as Intel, AMD, so the chip names continue to do well. Although you're probably seeing them down tomorrow because after hours, Broadcom is down, I think, 6% or so, something like that, as of the current time. But then you had some strength out of product manufacturing companies like Caterpillar, Lam Research, Applied Materials, and healthcare. Healthcare is bouncing back. Medtronic had pretty good earnings after and a good reaction there, the beat. So that was good. Industrial sector did well. Process manufacturing did well. Energy did well. As once again, what's going on in the Middle East is there's no resolution. Not a lot of headlines here, but clearly it's not moving really in any direction. The Straits of Hormuz remains closed. And once again, it's very clear that Iran holds the cards and the current administration is going to have to give in at some point. Frankly, you're probably going to have to see oil prices reaccelerate to the upside, probably past 125, maybe in the 150 level. That's where you'll probably get some sort of resolution. ISM services came in for May 54.5, up from 53.6% in April and ahead of consensus. So that was overall a positive. ADP private payrolls, 122,000 in May, ahead of consensus and the highest in 16 months. And this goes back to what I've been saying is, despite all the headlines and all of that, what you have to look at is under the hood. This is what we look at all the time as our banks lending. Are the credit markets seizing up? Is there anything that's preventing from more economic activity from happening besides just a little bit higher prices for underlying commodities? The answer is not really, and that is why the markets continue to remain strong. Now, that could change, but as of now, things are doing okay. Well, we're heading into a break. I'm ready for your calls now or anytime, 24/7 at 888-99-CHART.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP on the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I would like to get a broad index fund to diversify my portfolio. I like the idea of dividends for income for retirement. What do you think of ticker symbol SCHD, Schwab U.S. Dividend Equity ETF? I look forward to hearing your feedback on the show. Thank you.
Looking at SCHD, a very popular dividend fund, low expense ratio. The SEC yield 3.2%. So solid, not amazing, but for a dividend fund, it's pretty good. What I always say with any of these dividend ETFs or dividend funds is most of them are just closet large cap value ETFs. That's bottom line. Just how they're tilted, the type of companies that pay dividends. It leans towards value type of names. And that's why if you look at its exposure to things like technology, 19%, roughly half of what the overall S&P is. And then 18% is consumer defensive, which is called consumer staples, 18% there. Healthcare also 18%. And then everything else is in the single digits, less than 0.04% in utilities, which is interesting because utilities usually pay nice dividends. Industrial is only 7%. Cyclical is only 6%, financial services 9%, real estate 0%. I would think there'd be that as well. So, you know, my issue here is that if you look at its three top holdings, actually energy is 15%. Sorry. So that is kind of an inflationary asset. When you're in an inflationary environment, there are three sectors that don't tend to do very well. Number one is technology typically. Now, right now that's not happening. So, you know, there are always kind of anomalies and you're seeing the chip cycle right now that's really driving tech forward. But usually multiples come down for technology names. But once again, not happening currently, but will happen once. One of the reasons why it's usually bad is because the Fed tightens into higher inflation and that brings multiples down. Think 2022 timeframe. The Fed's not doing that right now. The Fed's actually mildly stimulative. And until they start to tighten, you know, tech will probably do relatively well. But I digress. Then you get into consumer defensive and healthcare. And these are two sectors that in many ways are negatively impacted by higher inflation because of higher input costs. They feel higher energy input costs. They feel the higher cost of labor because both of those industries are very labor intensive. So And input costs. So think if you're a consumer defensive company, think of consumer staple, think of packaged food companies, think of cleaning products, things like that. The input costs of those products go up as well. So those are sectors that tend to not do very well also. So, and if you look right now, what's been down its luck over the past few months, healthcare and consumer staples. So if you look at the overall exposure here, I don't love it. I really don't. And you can see that in the performance of this particular fund. What are we doing this year? It's up. Oh, I guess it is. Wow. It's up pretty nice this year, surprisingly. Up 19%. I think that's because of what's going on with its largest holding, which is Qualcomm. But last year, go look at last year. SP was up, what was it, 17% in that range? This is only up 4%. And then if you look longer term, 2024 is up 11%. The broader index is up 17%. 2023, this is up 4.5%. The broader index is up 14.3%. 2022, when the market was down big, this was down about 3%. So it definitely held water. It's lower risk. But I just think you can do better. I would want some utility exposure. I would want some REIT exposure. I'd want more industrial exposure. So that is my issue. I don't hate it. It gets a 3 out of 5 stars for Morningstar. 3 out of 5. So not bad, not great. It's just very popular. I just think you can find much better out there. But it's not a terrible fund. Now, from time to time, we get questions via the Best Talk podcast review on iTunes. We love those because we get to them quickly. JDC Barut gave us 5 stars and said, would you buy now or continue watching MLM? MLM, if I remember correctly, this is, Martin Merita Materials. Okay, if I remember correctly, they make highway salts. Oh, no. That's what it is. Different company. This makes materials that go crushed stone, sand, gravel, that is distributed, focus on aggregate, cement, downstream products, paving services. Okay, so we're in the zone of what I thought it was. Remember what it was. Free cash flow, $1 billion, $35 billion market cap, decent balance sheet, return on equity is 10%. Not great, not terrible. Long term, this is kind of where it's at, kind of around the 10% return on equity level, which, once again, not a whole lot to write home about. The chart is just so-so, relative strength 32, certainly not great. PE based on forward-looking earnings of $22.81. A $583 stock. I'm just giving this. I'm passing. I'm choosy with my capital, so I want to find something I'm more excited about. This I'm not. Now, the next invest talk, we'll look into the story: net worth milestones by age. Why net worth matters more than income from your financial security. We'll get to that story tomorrow. But I'm ready for your calls now at 888-99-CHART. At KPP Financial, accountability means more than advice. It means we invest alongside you. Through our parallel investing approach, when we recommend an investment for clients, one or more KPP principals invest their own capital at the same time. Same day, same price, same percentage. If your portfolio moves, ours does too. That is alignment. That is transparency. That is the KPP difference. Visit investtalk.com to get your free portfolio review.
Stop guessing with supplements. Most of us take vitamins blindly, wasting time and money. Your body is unique, and it deserves better. Introducing True Diagnostic, an easy at-home health test. With a quick finger prick, True Diagnostic uses advanced epigenetic testing to analyze over 1 million data points and measure up to 180 biomarkers. You will receive clear digital results with a personalized 90-day actionable plan to improve health, boost energy, and slow down your aging process. There is absolutely no guesswork and no generic advice. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off at TrueDiagnostic.com using code INVEST20 at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code INVEST20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription. True Diagnostic, spelled TrueDiagnostic.com. Use code INVEST20 for 20% off today.
Get ready for an all-new Invest Talk Wealth webinar. Beyond the Yield, how to invest for your income needs. Tuesday, June 30th, noon to 1 Pacific time. Learn more and register now at investtalk.com.
Now, my main focus point today is about the gold markets, and a lot are confused by it, especially since its peak in early February, when there was just a lot of fervor, a lot of positive sentiment after a very good year. Not shocking to see it pull back. It's pulled back a little bit more, I think, than most have expected. And it's correlated with what's happening in the Middle East. Now, a lot of market participants will say, well, higher inflation should be a tailwind for gold prices. Now, that's usually the case when central banks are also neutral to dovish. But over the past couple of months, they become a little more hawkish. So that's part of it here, where expectations for one Fed rate hike by year end is at 41%. 14% chance there'll be two rate hikes, and a 2% chance there'll be three rate hikes. It's a big move from just a couple of months ago. 1 month ago, there's a 12% chance of a cut and only a 9% chance of a rate hike. That's pushed the dollar up a little bit. Once again, those are short-term headwinds. But to me, the bigger headwind does actually have to do directly with what's happening in the Middle East, because a lot of these Middle East countries that are big oil exporters, OPEC, shall we say, they are not getting the revenue that they normally do from their exports. So what are they doing instead to keep themselves afloat? Well, they're selling assets. What assets do they typically hold? Well, a lot of gold, a lot of treasuries, things like that. It's also one of the reasons why rates continue to go up. So that's very underappreciated in this market. Now, there's more catalysts potentially for gold going forward. You have big jobs data coming up next week. But overall, once this geopolitical situation stabilizes at some point, because it will come to a head and there'll be probably some resolution, that to me will be the catalyst for an unpinning of gold prices that really keeps the structural theme intact. Why? Because central banks continue to be net buyers. And this is the underappreciated or often forgotten aspect of what's going on, what has gone on really since the start of the Ukraine war in 2022, when Washington, under the Biden administration, confiscated Russia's dollar-denominated assets, mainly treasuries. So central banks started to diversify. And as of now, gold has overtaken U.S. government bonds as the world's top reserve asset. Counts for 27% of all global central bank reserve assets. That was the end of last year. It's up 20% year over year. While treasuries fell from 25% of global central bank assets to 22%. Euro-denominated assets, unchanged at 15%. So that's clearly what's happening here. It's not like they're selling all these other paper assets to buy gold. They're just selling dollar-denominated assets and mainly treasuries to buy this gold. Now, the world's central banks now hold 36,000 tons of gold, almost as much as during the peak of the Bretton Woods era, when the U.S. dollar was pegged to bullion and foreign exchange rates to other countries were fixed to gold. Back then, central banks held 38,000 tons of gold. So we're approaching those levels, probably past it, this year. Now, even with the big run-up in gold prices last year, central banks actually reduced their purchases. Still buying a lot, 850 tons last year, but it's after 3 years in a row of net purchases of more than 1,000 tons per year. Who are the biggest buyers since the Ukraine war? China, Poland, Turkey, and India. Who was the single biggest buyer last year? You're surprised to hear this. It was actually the stablecoin Tether. They purchased more than 100 tons of gold. Now, despite Turkey being one of the biggest accumulators last year, they actually were net sellers. Well, say not sellers. They loaned or sold 130 tons of gold after the Ukraine war. And that goes to show you why gold is under pressure over the past few months. It's just because of the Ukraine war. Countries like Turkey that need liquidity, need access to capital, and a lot of them are selling their gold. So to me, this is more of a short-term blip, but the long-term structural tailwinds remain in play. Now let's pivot back to another listener question right now from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Duncan from New York. Thank you for all that you do. I just would like to go over the ETF EUAD. It's an aerospace ETF, mostly focused on Europe. I got it when the war started out in Iran, going back to talking to AI and thinking about which would be a good ETF to invest in, and AI gave me this, and then it was too late. I think I learned my lesson in that. But I'm looking to free up some positions, and I was thinking about selling this one. With the current environment right now, I know it's important to be diversified. I already have some ETFs in other foreign equities, such as South Korea and Brazil. Should I keep this ETF in my portfolio, or should I be able to unload this and use this capital for somewhere else? Thank you for all that you do. Have a great day. Bye.
Oh, this is great. I love this call because we've said it before. AI is not good at picking what's telling you what to invest in. It's not. It's historically, it just go look. I've seen every study of this, and its timing is horrible because it thinks. Okay. So what you have to understand about AI is that it's going to give you a middle of the road answer. It's going to say it confidently. And for most things, the middle of the road is good. It's a balance between two extremes, potentially. It's giving you the generally accepted answer for a bunch of different things. It's giving you the base answer for how to do X, Y, and Z. Or whatever you're querying it for. But what that means is it's not going to give you anything that interesting or really good when it wants to give you investment advice. You do not take AI's advice because look at this EAUD. When did the Iran war start? End of February. This was trading at what? $46 per share. And basically since the beginning of the Iran war, this has been trending lower. Now we're at the close today around 36, 39 and change. So it's down, what are 12, 15%? And what's the market in? It's obviously up. So yes, this you should sell this. This is in the downtrend. This clearly peaked out back in September of, it was actually October of last year. And it's just been losing momentum ever since. It tried to break out again in January, failed, and then had a little bump up again at the start of the Iran war, but didn't make a new high. And that was another tell. And this is where it goes back to hiring a professional. I could have told you this. If you called me on the day of Iran war and said, should I buy this? And I looked at this chart, I would be like, why isn't this breaking out? You would think that what's going on in the Middle East and in Ukraine would drive more investment in European defense stocks. So it should be breaking out. But this already had a move. In 2020, let's see, it came out in fall of 24. Had a good move last year. And once again, peaked out in the fall. So to me, the story is waning. The momentum's waning. The flows are waning into this subsector. And it's a lesson, and this is a lesson I've learned from 25 years of doing this, which is when there is good news, logically, right? You look at a headline, you say, well, that should be good for this particular sector or this company or whatever. And the stock is near highs. It moves up, but it doesn't really break out. That is telling you all the money is in. When something has rallied, it has good news, but it does not make new highs, it's over. That's the end. And you could say that in the other way. When something's in a long downtrend, think software recently, starting to get a little bid. Why? Because everyone sold is going to sell. The sentiment is that bad. There's not many weak hands left. And when you get bad news and it doesn't go down more, well, that's, guess what? The selling's probably over. No more weak hands. They're all gone. And so this is a fantastic lesson everybody out there should understand. It's why we say don't follow the headlines. Follow price action. Follow fundamentals. The headlines, more often than not, will lead you astray. They will not lead you to a good investment. And AI certainly will not lead you to a good investment. Now, can it help you with research, stress testing ideas, and understanding why things may be happening, etc.? Sure. But it's up to you, the human being, to use your own brain and not blindly follow the lemming. Remember, that's what's kind of, it's kind of getting the lemmings. It's getting the sentiment of the lemmings. That's what an AI chatbots are designed to do. And sometimes the lemmings are fine for most things, but not when it comes to investing. Let's go talk to Sammy in San Francisco looking at Salesforce CRM.
Hey, thanks, Justin, for taking my call. Would like to get your thoughts on CRM. It hit a low of 163 earlier this year, and it has bounced back a little bit, and now it looks like it's going back lower. Do you think this is a good time to get in, or should I wait longer to buy in for the long term?
Here's my thing. In the software space, there are going to be some spectacular losers from AI, companies that will just get destroyed. There are some that will muddle through, maybe they'll integrate some AI features. There'll be some things that AI can and can't replicate. They'll do okay. There's others that I think, especially niche players that integrate hardware, those will be, I think, more protected from AI because it won't be as easy to develop hardware that integrates with software, et cetera. Those, to me, I think are going to be the bigger winners long term. But to me, CRM, there's a reason it's called Salesforce is not a SLF. Yeah, that's not the symbol SLF or something, right? It's CRM. Client relationship management software. That's what Salesforce does. And they've been the best in the business for a long time. But here's the issue. There's no hardware connected to it. It's an extremely easy thing to replicate. It's just a database on the back end. Really what CRMs are, it's just a database. Probably one of the easiest things to vibe code out there. And you can create one on your own and by yourself with Claude Code, with a decent programmer. Not difficult. So to me, Salesforce does look relatively cheap on the surface. But I think these and some of the other big names in this software patch, they're value traps. And this one screams value trap bigger than all of them to me. So yes, it will get a balance. It got a balance on the recent kind of move in software. But I don't buy this. I just think this will be a melting ice cube as more and more companies will vibe code their own database, their own CRM that fits what they need even more, and they don't have to pay thousands of dollars per seat. I have somebody that works for Salesforce, and they're selling more AI software and add-ons to what they're doing, but they're losing seats. They're cutting seats. And so the net-net is actually flat to negative on a lot of their clients because they're losing seats. They're losing people that are getting replaced by AI. So to me, this is a value trap. I don't touch it. Plenty of the software names that I think are attractive. And here comes our last break. I can still take your live calls at 888-99-CHART.
You spend lots of time optimizing your portfolio, researching positions, managing risk, and leveraging the power of compounding. So, here's a question you need to take seriously. What could poor sleep actually be costing you? We know that sleep deprivation can degrade your cognitive performance, decision quality, emotional regulation, and temperature is a key factor in determining quality sleep. Finally, the temperature regulation challenge has been solved by the ChiliPad 2.0, a water-based mattress topper. It actively controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees all night to get you into deep, restorative sleep faster and keep you there longer. It works on your existing mattress, so a new bed is not needed. Visit www.sleep.me/invest to get up to $255 off a ChiliPad 2.0. This special offer is available for InvestTalk listeners and only for a limited time. Order it today and get your 30-day sleep trial with free shipping and free returns. Go to www.sleep.me/invest and see why cool sleep is worth every cent.
You've got finance and investment questions, and the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Dennis from the East Coast of Iowa, and I'm calling about Uranium Royalty Company, UROY. Either as a volatility trade or long-term investment. As a volatility trade, I would hope to harvest maybe 12% two, three, four times in a 12-month period. So just a fraction of a position in my account. But I'm also interested in it as a possible long-term investment. I like the space. Hopefully it has some room for growth. I'll listen to your answer on the podcast. Thank you.
All right, looking at UROY Uranium Royalty Corp. This is a very small cap name, $529 million market cap. They operate an exploration company, engage in acquiring and assembling a portfolio of royalties and invest in companies with exposure to uranium and physical uranium. So they go and invest in uranium mines, a lot of junior explorers, things like that. There are a lot of these type of names in the gold and silver patch. So they're trying to replicate kind of that model where they're not actually doing the exploration themselves, but they're investing. They're taking equity effectively positions in a bunch of different mines, and some work out, some won't. Over the long term, they hope that the ones that will work out counter the ones that don't, and net net, they have good positive cash flow and returns. But that's the hope, because the reality is return equity is 1%. Free cash flow is pretty good at about $28 million. That's a all-time high on a enterprise value of $464 million. But the shares outstanding continue to go up. So you get dilution. Last year, they lost 3 cents. This year, they're supposed to make 2 cents. And next year, they're supposed to make a penny. It's a $3.61 stock. So it's effectively a penny stock, but it's trading at pretty ridiculous multiples, 300 times. The chart's okay. The sector has been going up, but you're just getting diluted away because they're just issuing more and more shares. And here's my issue with the junior miners in general in the uranium space. Is there's the big daddies. There's the Kazatomprom, if I'm saying it correctly, as well as Cameco out of Canada. Those are the two heavyweights in the industry. And especially Cameco, I know Cameco well, they have a lot of supply that is just not being produced because it's not economical at these prices. But as prices go up, they can unlock some of that supply almost immediately and capitalize on that by selling more pounds of uranium. So yes, junior miners could start to produce. But historically, across the mining space, whether you're talking about uranium, platinum, gold, silver, whatever it is, most of them are just money pits, pun intended. Meaning, they're just investing and they're not getting much out. So I don't see the argument here of buying something like that, except if you want really high kind of pricing leverage within this space. I pass on it. I want the bigger names. I don't want to mess with this small name. We have one more call to answer.
Calling about AstraZeneca, symbol AZM. Bought it a couple years back. Just looking to see your thoughts on the future, whether the stock might be a hold or sell. Look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast. And thank you for all you do.
Looking at AstraZeneca, AZN is a symbol, and we actually own this for clients. So we like it. Revenues up 8% expected this year. Earnings up 12%. Earnings up expected to be up 14% next year to $11.66 on $176 stock. About a mid-teens multiple out of the UK. So get foreign exposure. They have good pipeline. It's one of the best pharma names out there. That's why we own AstraZeneca. Pulled back a little bit as of late on the stronger dollar, I think it was just a bit overbought, needed to come back in, but the longer term uptrend remains intact. So I'd be buying AstraZeneca on this pullback. That's what we're doing for clients. Now I'm Justin Klein reminding you about KPP Financial's parallel investing. When we make a trade for our clients, we make the same trade for ourselves, same day, same price, same percentage, no front running, no special treatments. What that means, we invest right alongside our clients. It's very different than most of the big wirehouses. We share the same risk and potential for success. And you can learn more by heading to investtalk.com. Please tell your friends and family about a free podcast download that you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or over on our YouTube channel as well. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. And heads up, our next wealth webinar is coming up on Tuesday, June 30th from 12 to 1 p.m. Pacific time. The title is Beyond the Yield, How to Invest for Your Income Needs. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.